This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. North Carolina youth voters turned out in the polls, in record numbers this year, and that's according to some recent estimates. People aged 18 to 29 were projected to have a significant influence on elections both statewide and nationally. Did they? My guest is Rachel Weber, the North Carolina press secretary at Next Gen America. Next Gen America is a progressive advocacy nonprofit funded by the billionaire and former Democratic presidential candidate Tom Steyer. Rachel, welcome to the State of Things.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Let's start with some of the numbers, at least what we know so far about voter turnout among 18 to 29-year-olds in the 2020 elections in North Carolina. What do you have?
Sure. Of course, the results still aren't official here in North Carolina, but the numbers show that young voters really did turn out in record numbers. 18 to 29-year-olds probably made up about 16% of the total turnout in North Carolina, which is up from our share of the electorate in 2016.
And what was it in 2016? It was not quite 15%, right?
That's right. Yeah, under 15%. I think that we saw really early on in this cycle that young voters were more motivated than ever to cast their ballot, and they really did, all throughout early voting and then on election day as well.
Obviously, the young voters, that group between 18 and 29, make up about 17% of the state's population. What data do we have so far about young voting in North Carolina in terms of its influence on the elections at the state and national level?
Right. That's a great question. I mean, in close races up and down the ballot, we're seeing that young voters make up more than the margin of victory for Democrats. And that's why when we organize at NextGen, when we talk to young voters, Gen Zers, millennials, about the power of their vote, we let them know that it really does matter. And especially in some of these close legislative races where young millennial candidates, say Brian Farkas in House District 9, were able to potentially, it seems, flip a district. That's coming down to a couple of hundred of votes, many of them cast by young people.
How does North Carolina's youth voter turnout compare with other states?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. North Carolina was one of the most closely watched battleground states in the election this year. And that's why NextGen invested in North Carolina in addition to 10 other battlegrounds. We absolutely saw our youth voter turnout increase in the state and pretty close to some levels in other states. Our neighbors to the south in Georgia, their youth voter turnout was at record high levels, and we're seeing that play out in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin and Arizona. In all of these states, it was high youth voter turnout that ultimately propelled Biden to the White House.
What are some of the barriers to voting that you observed or that young voters may have reported this year?
That's a great question. Young voters face barriers to the polls in a normal election year. And I don't think anybody will say that 2020 was a normal election year.
I won't hear that from me, but yeah.
We face a lot of obstacles, especially college students and young voters, whether it's confusing registration requirements and residency requirements, whether it's lack of transportation to the polls. And all of those barriers just increased with the coronavirus. So you had people having to navigate the process of voting by mail and requesting a mail-in ballot for the first time. And I think it's truly a testament to youth voter enthusiasm and young voters understanding the stakes of this election that even in that challenging election year, we still went to the polls in record numbers and saw these results.
Let's talk about some of the assumptions people had going in. Your assumption, as we identified you as a progressive group that's trying to sign up voters with the assumption that younger voters will tend to vote Democrat. Is that assumption, where does that assumption come from? What data do we have to support that? And is there anything in the outcomes in the 2020 election that reinforces that?
Right. Well, I guess I'll start with the second part of your question. When it comes to the outcomes, absolutely, young voters went to the polls and supported Biden over Donald Trump in huge margins. In North Carolina, young voters supported Joe Biden by a whopping 16-point margin. Mm-hmm. You know, going back, though, why are young voters voting for Democrats and supporting progressives? The folks that we talk to on the phones and on college campuses, you know, we really care about the issues. Issues like climate action and racial justice and affordable health care and cost of college. We're listening to the candidates and where they're coming down on these issues that are so close to our hearts and that we're bearing such significant effects on. And that's why, by and large, you know, we look at the ballot, we see the choices that we have, and we break for Democrats in these huge margins because those are the candidates that have plans to make progress on the issues that we care about.
Well, it's interesting in some ways because the issues have not changed very much over the past four or, you know, even 12 years in some ways, those issues that you named. Obviously, voter turnout was much higher across the board. What was it about this election? Was there something about, you know, what was it, the candidates? Was it the issues? Why was the turnout greater when, to some degree, the issues hadn't changed much?
I think that young voters had a couple of truly activating experiences this year. So, first of all, the coronavirus pandemic. You know, young voters ranked that very highly in one of the issues that was driving them to the polls. And all throughout the coronavirus response, or lack of response, young voters bear a really significant burden. You know, you had young people graduating from college in May into one of the worst job markets we've seen. You had young voters returning to college campuses and in chaos and uncertainty because of the mishandling of the coronavirus. And I think that was a really activating experience for people to look at who was in office and how that was affecting their lives. And then second of all, the reckoning that our country has had when it comes to racial injustice and, you know, correcting these structural injustices and systemic racism that people are still facing the consequences of, young people are really leading the way. And so we saw all throughout this cycle, it's young folks that are leading the movement for progress, whether it's out in the streets or going to the polls. And we proved that this November.
Well, as we said, that they're going into this, there was an assumption that younger voters would tend to vote in larger numbers for Democrats. That is proving itself out in the 2020 election. As you dig into this data at the granular level, anything surprising you?
You know, one thing that I don't know if it surprises me because, of course, we already know this to be true, but I think it's another reminder that we need to continue to invest in young voters. We need to invest in this crucial voting bloc, and especially look to Black young voters and voters of color to leadership in these movements. You know, I said that young voters at large in North Carolina supported Joe Biden by this huge 16-point margin. Well, if you look at young Black North Carolinians, 97% of them supported Joe Biden. These are the folks that are leading our movement, that are driving us forward to change, and who we need to be listening to and investing in for elections to come.
Not only in voter motivation, but maybe in the years ahead in candidate selection as well, if we take a look at that data and try to interpret that. Tell us, what about the momentum, though? Again, looking forward, this obviously was an extraordinary election. There was one very, very special new issue in this one, coronavirus. You think this momentum is going to carry forward in the midterms and again the next presidential election?
Absolutely. I mean, that's part of the ethic of Next Gen America, is that we're looking to activate and mobilize young voters with the understanding that when we bring them into the political process, they stay. They become lifelong voters, lifelong activists. And, you know, the people that in our generation, the people that we talk to, there's always been this understanding that the work doesn't end on November 3rd. You know, the polls don't close and we don't all pack up shop. We know that there's a lot of work to be done in the years ahead, no matter who's in office on the local, state, and national level, to advocate for progress on the issues where time really does make a difference, on climate action, on racial justice. And so absolutely, I think that there's incredible momentum for young voters to continue to lead that fight.
And beyond voting, do you think this really is a momentum for change in terms of young people's involvement in the process and becoming candidates, taking leadership roles?
I think that that's absolutely right. I mean, I'm really encouraged by some of the legislative candidates, for example. You know, there were a couple of young candidates that have now been propelled likely to victory, and they're making that legislative body look more like North Carolina and look more like our generation. And ultimately, those are the people that are going to be listening to us and representing our concerns. So I think we're going to see more of that. And I think that there's a real understanding, too, that when it comes to advocating for progress, we've got to use every single tool in the toolbox. Voting is one of those very important tools. So is running for office. So is lobbying. So is protesting. And we're going to keep on using those tools for, you know, years to come.
Rachel Weber is North Carolina Press Secretary at Next Gen America. Next Gen America, a progressive advocacy nonprofit. Rachel, thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank. Have a good day.
Coming up, we're going to talk to some first-time voters and youth organizers about their reflections on the 2020 elections. This is The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned. This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Young people stepped up to vote this year in North Carolina, many for the first time. So how did it go, and how do young voters feel about the election outcome? Kathleen Hoblitzel is a second year at Smith College, currently schooling from home in North Carolina. Welcome, Kathleen.
Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you. Kobe Ledford is here as well, a first year at Wake Forest. Hello, Kobe.
Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you. It's your first time voting in a presidential election, Kobe. What was your reaction to the outcome?
Honestly, it's about what I expected. I expected it to be drawn out and really not really have a good, like, solid on election day. And I did probably think that Biden was going to win, so I wasn't that surprised on that end either.
How did you feel about the actual process of voting? Like, how, because we know there were all these complications. This is your first time voting, but I wonder how you felt it went this year, given all the complications, and how did it go for you?
I would say it actually wasn't quite as weird as I thought it would be. I thought with COVID it'd be really weird, but I mean, it's pretty much just like normal, except you're wearing a mask and, you know, there's barriers whenever you're talking to poll workers, but overall not that much different compared to past years.
Was there any point in the process early on before you voted that you had your doubts about whether you were going to participate this time?
Not really. I did have like considerations on whether I was going to like mail in vote or vote in person, but never really whether I was going to vote or not.
Well, Kathleen, this was also your first time voting, and you decided to vote early. Tell us why you decided to go the early voting route.
Yeah, so part of it is that I'm living at home this semester, and my dad is in a higher risk category with the pandemic, so we wanted to avoid the election day crowds. But election day is also very inconvenient for most people. It's a lot to take off 2, 3, 4 hours waiting in line on a Tuesday. I have 4 classes, and so it was just more convenient to go to an early voting location to fit it into my schedule to vote. And then I had the security of knowing my vote was counted and accepted.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you had considered mail-in.
I did consider mail-in. I originally requested a mail-in ballot and received it from Chatham County, but I ended up deciding to go to an early voting location just so that I could have that satisfaction of feeding the ballot into the machine and, you know, knowing that my vote was delivered without any problems like witness signatures or anything like that.
Well, I'll stick with you, Kathleen. I want to ask you both about this because a few weeks ago we talked with some young voters who were undecided and uncertain about who to vote for in this coming election. Did you have a hard time, first of all, deciding whether or not you were going to vote? Kathleen?
For me, not voting was really not an option. This is a critical election, and the rights and lives of my friends, my family, myself were on the line. And so I felt an obligation to our country and our fellow citizens to fulfill my civic duty and vote for the version of America that I want to see. We did end up with record turnout from both sides voting for the versions that they wanted to see. But if I don't vote, someone else is going to decide for me. So I might as well give my opinion and try.
Well, let's talk about that with something like, you know, more than 140 million votes cast. Kobe, that's you're one of those. And I wonder about the feeling that so many voters have. And I think what keeps many voters from the polls is that their vote doesn't count. Do you feel like, you know, your vote matters? How do you tell yourself about the importance of your vote, given the fact that so many other people are voting?
Well, I think you have to look at it as a personal duty, sort of a personal duty to go vote and make sure that your voice is actually being heard. And also, especially when we look at North Carolina, we're a swing state. It's probably going to come down to just a few thousand votes on the presidential level. But even on a local level, there's several races that are extremely close. And whenever you consider those things, I believe it becomes even more important.
Oh, go ahead. Please continue.
And I feel like you can't really complain about the system or complain about your elected officials unless you vote. So I feel like that's really a big part of voting and not the main reason why I voted, but I do think it's an important part of the puzzle.
Well, talk about the main motivations. What are the issues that drove you to the polls or that you thought were most important and the reason your vote should register?
I think the big things for me is just sort of not only sort of the coronavirus and how we're dealing with that, because that's obviously like a big impact on everyone in North Carolina, but also sort of how are we going to deal with business climate and jobs and those sort of big economic issues.
Kathleen, how about you? What were the big issues for you going into this election?
For me, it was more on a human rights approach. So, you know, the right to not be discriminated against for the color of your skin, the right to marry who I love, the right to a good access to health care. I was seeing a lot of people suffer with those rights being impeded upon, and I wanted to protect those rights.
Let me ask you both this one last question, Kobe. We've talked about the divisions that we're facing in this country. The fact is that our responsibilities do not end on Election Day. How do you see your responsibility going forward in a country that really has a lot of work to do, given some of the divisions that we've seen before, during, and now after this election? Kobe?
I feel like this is probably the biggest impact that you can have, and it's very close to the vote, in really just having a sense of humanity, a sense of like civility towards others, and having conversations, but realizing whether they're on the same side of you, the opposite side, they have different opinions, that we're all still humans, we're all still Americans, we all deserve to be treated with a basic level of decency. And really, whenever you have interactions with people from the other side and realize that, you know, they're human, even though if they have different political beliefs than you, they're still trying to do the best thing for America, best thing for North Carolina. They just might have a different viewpoint or a different way to achieve that. So once you realize that, I feel like you can understand that we do live in a pretty good country and we can reach a better level of civility and give rid of some of the partisan divide that we currently have.
Kathleen, how about you? What are your responsibilities now going forward, now that you voted?
I think my responsibility is to keep being engaged, keep holding people accountable. Like, things aren't going to change overnight just with the results of an election. There's a lot of work now to be done to, you know, unite our country. This was a very divisive election. And so, you know, working on advocating for the changes that we've been talking about in this election and now setting those into effect.
Kathleen Hoblitzel. I'm not going to cut you off. Keep going.
Oh, just my last note is that the election isn't over. Down in Georgia, there's still two Senate runoffs that are going to determine the balance of the Senate for the next 2 years. And so I might find a way to volunteer with those.
Kathleen Hoblitzel is a second year at Smith College and a North Carolina resident. Kobe Ledford is a first year at Wake Forest. Thank you both for being on this program.
Thanks so much for having us on.
Kathleen, I'm going to ask you to stay with us if you don't mind. Kobe, thanks so much for being with us. You know, young voters are not only got themselves out to vote this year, but they also work to motivate their peers. And some North Carolina counties saw an influx of student poll workers and college campus organizers who were getting the word out. Lulu Botta is a fourth year at North Carolina State University and a member of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority, Incorporated. Lulu organized Pull Up at the Polls, an event on NC State's campus that encouraged community members and students to come out and vote. Lulu, welcome to the State of Things.
Hi, Frank. Thank you for having me.
And Kathleen is still with us. Lulu, tell us a little bit about Pull Up at the Polls. What did that look like? How were you organized, and you know, kind of what were the goals?
Yeah, so the event really started out of a lot of discourse that I was seeing on my college campus about whether or not to vote. And one of the things that I realized and my organization realized is that we needed to facilitate voting for our peers if we wanted them to actually come out and vote. So Pull Up at the Polls is an event sponsored by our National Panhellenic Council, which is the Black Greek Council on NC State's campus, to really encourage people to stay in line and to continue voting at NC State's early voting site at Tally Student Union. So we had some food, some snacks and drinks, and then also music playing just to encourage people to stay in line if the lines did get too long.
Did you have did you have conversations? Did you have to sort of use a lot of persuasion? How did it go, and how often did you find yourself saying, please wait just another 20 minutes?
Actually, the line moved very quickly. So fortunately for us, our event wasn't really necessary on NC State's campus. Everything moved pretty quickly, pretty smoothly, and people were also getting out to vote early. So by the time that we hosted our event, which was the second to last day of early voting, a lot of our peers had stated that they had already voted.
I would even think that planning for the kinds of activities that you had in mind is difficult during the pandemic. How did you manage all that?
It was so hard. There were a lot of things that we had to consider, both from the COVID perspective, but then also from the regulations surrounding hosting events at polling sites. So NC State has a process of screening events that we had to go through. And while we were there, we had to keep in mind, how are we going to keep track of each of the individuals that come to our event or pass by our table, whether it be to grab snacks or have conversations with some of our members, which is really difficult, again, from the voting perspective, because we didn't want to be a source of voter intimidation. We didn't want to make it look like, hey, sign in and we're going to keep track of who you're voting for or where you're voting. So those are things that we had to keep in mind as well. But then also just maintaining social distancing and making sure that our members who are staffing our table weren't getting sick from other people coming by who may not have been wearing masks or people who weren't practicing social distancing.
Well, I mean, that's the complication, right? Snacks is a great motivator to stay in line if somebody can give you something to eat, but then the mask has to come down if you're going to have the snack in line and not take it back with you.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, do you think the event was successful? How did you measure your success or qualify how you did?
So normally we would measure success by the amount of people that came and stopped by. We did have a QR code sign-in, so that was a contactless sign-in that we had for people. But I would say in the ways that we thought it was going to be successful, it actually wasn't. So we didn't have that many people stop by the table. But of the few people that we did have stop by, we were able to relay what we were doing there and then also some of the dates for early voting. So we chose the second to last day of early voting because we wanted to, again, be there if people were having a long time in the lines, but also to encourage people who hadn't voted yet to vote and still give them the time to do so. So we were able to relay that there was one more day of early voting left, but then some polling sites may have half days to just be considerate of that. But then it was also great to have members of our council get together and have conversations that we haven't been able to have because of COVID. We are a programming body, but we're also a very social and very active council. So it has been kind of a hindrance on us to not be able to have these in-person programs during COVID. But then also it is a success in the way that it allowed me to talk to you on the State of Things about early voting and the importance of that.
What did you do in the run-up to the voting outside of the polling places, again, to encourage people to get out and vote when you weren't at the polling place?
Yeah, so we actually have been having a lot of conversations on the personal level about it. I remember one instance where there was just a lot of discourse on Twitter. That's the main source of social media that I use and a lot of members of my council use. And people were just deciding whether or not voting in this election was going to be impactful, right? We had a lot of people who thought that voting was the only way or the main way that they could get their voice out there. And then, of course, others who believed that their energy was best put into being physically out there, protesting, organizing on the community level, and that voting wasn't necessarily where they thought that their energy should lie. So we were having those conversations more often than not. But then also members of my council, even in their respective organizations, have been doing a lot of work hosting events surrounding voting, giving information on voting, organizing, working the polls, and doing their own part individually to make sure that everybody is able to vote and sort of clear those hurdles that are put up against us.
Yeah, lots of efforts and lots of activities all across the state. Let's hear how things went for a student at UNC Chapel Hill who did voting drives as a volunteer for the North Carolina Public Interest Research Group.
We did things like class wraps, where basically we would just go into the classroom or the virtual classroom and just give a little speech on why we think voting is important and just drop some links and answer questions. And then to go into his classroom and the students actually have questions because they were unsure about their voting plans. I think it was most rewarding to everybody might know their voting plan by then, even if it's last minute, but just to go in and people still have questions. The vibe was everyone was kind of unsure, but once you really get to talk with people and talk out their plan, they got excited. Like, okay, I can actually do this during a pandemic. Like, everything's okay.
That was Sarah Jeffcoat, a second-year student at UNC Chapel Hill. I'm here with Lou Botta, a student at NC State, and Kathleen Hoblitzel, who's a student at Smith College, now at home in North Carolina. Kathleen, let me ask you, sort of how you got your information as a college student at home in North Carolina. What kind of conversations were you having with peers? Where were you getting your information about the issues that helped inform your vote?
Yeah, so for the second part of the question, how was I talking with my friends about voting? We had a lot of conversations about the differences among our different states. I have friends, all over the country. And so my friend in Pennsylvania was talking about, the secrecy ballots with her absentee ballots, or the secrecy envelopes. My friend in Washington was talking about how, as a registered voter, she would automatically get mailed a ballot with return postage paid, and she didn't need to worry about a stamp or printing an application or anything. And so there's a lot of different procedures for elections around the country that you have to navigate. For me in North Carolina, I mostly went straight to the source, the North Carolina Board of Elections website, and I found a lot of tools on that website useful. So the voter search to check on my registration. Once I early voted, I could see that my vote was accepted. I used the one-stop voting site search tool to find early voting sites. But there's a lot of different, rules and regulations around voting, and you do have to work to be an informed voter and plan ahead to know how to cast your ballot and be able to vote. You can't just show up on an election day and expect to be able to vote.
Lulu,
a lot to keep track of.
And the issues themselves, how were you, because there's so much noise in this election, how are you able to keep it all straight and feel like you were properly informed about not about voting, but about the issues themselves?
Right. So we had to do a lot of just gathering information on our own. I think social media is a great source to get the initial perspectives on an issue or bringing up an issue, but then also you have to do a lot of work outside to make sure that the information that you're getting is accurate. I listen to a lot of public radio. I sit in my car many times a day just listening to the radio. So that was another source for me to be able to get the information that I needed most accurately and then continue to do some research on my own.
Lulu, what about your organizing efforts with Pull Up at the Polls? Are you going to continue? Did it make you want to continue this kind of work?
Oh, I definitely plan on continuing. We have to continue. Luckily for us at NC State, we have a lot of great organizations that are doing this work. There's organizations through our university with Pack the Polls, and there are Pack the Polls ambassadors who do a lot of work. But I know for me, the Black community at NC State is so close, and there is so much organizing that goes on within our community that I have to continue to pull the work or pull my own weight to do the work necessary in addition to other members of my community.
Are you getting any sense from voters? You know, the one question is, does my vote count? And that can be a barrier to voting or not. That can be the incentive. But then afterward, what are you hearing? Lulu, I'll stick with you. From voters, maybe people you worked with and people that you were actually trying to convince or trying to help out, their sense that this was an important thing to do and that their vote did count. Are people feeling affirmed after this?
Yeah, I think going into it, a lot of people were concerned about whether or not their vote would actually count, whether or not it would make a difference. We know that North Carolina is a swing state, of course, but there is a lot of voter suppression that goes on in our state, and especially for those of us who might vote in Wake, Durham, or Orange County, because this is where we go to school, we may not feel that our vote has as much weight because these are counties that typically go blue. But then, of course, we have students who might go home to vote or use absentee ballots in other counties that may not vote in their interest all the time. So I think going into it, a lot of people had this perception that their vote didn't have any weight. But seeing the outcome of this election and how long it played out and how much absentee ballots and early voting played a factor in changing the way that we see some states go, I think a lot of our individuals, a lot of college students especially, are starting to realize that their vote does have more of a weight than they think it does.
Lulu Botta, fourth-year student at NC State, member of Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority, Incorporated. Lulu, thank you.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Kathleen Hoblitzel is a second-year student at Smith College and a North Carolina resident. Thank you, Kathleen.
Thank you, Frank.
North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.